Gasher's hold tightened on Jake's throat until he could hardly breathe. At the same time, he was pulled backward. They retreated that way, facing the gap where Roland stood with Susanna on his back and Eddie just behind him, still holding the Ruger, which Gasher had called a toy pistol. Jake could feel Gasher's breath puffing against his ear in hot little blurts. Worse, he could smell it. "Don't try a thing," Gasher whispered, "or I'll rip off your sweetmeats and stuff 'em up your bung. And it would be sad to lose 'em before you ever got a chance to use 'em, wouldn't it? Very sad indeed." They reached the end of the bridge. Jake stiffened, believing Gasher would throw the grenade anyway, but he didn't, at least not immediately. He backed Jake through a narrow alley between two small cubicles which had probably served as toll booths once upon a time. Beyond them, the brick warehouses loomed like prison cell blocks. "Now, Callie, I ain't gonna let go of your neck, or how would you ever have wind to run with? But I'll be holding your arm, and if you don't run like the wind, I promise I'll rip it right off and use it for a club to beat you with. You understand?" Jake nodded, and suddenly the terrible, stifling pressure was gone from his windpipe. As soon as it was, he became aware of his hand again. It felt hot and swollen and full of fire. Then Gasher seized his bicep with fingers like bands of iron, and he forgot all about his hand.
"Toodle-doo,"
Gasher called in a grotesquely cheery falsetto. He waggled the grenade at the others.
"Bye-bye, dears."
Then he growled to Jake, "Now run, you horned little squint, run." Jake was first whirled and then yanked into a run. The two of them went flying down a curved ramp to street level. Jake's first confused thought was that this was what the East River Drive would look like 200 or 300 years after some weird brain plague had killed all the sane people in the world. The ancient rusty hulks of what had once surely been automobiles stood at intervals along both curbs. Most were bubble-shaped roadsters that looked like no cars Jake had ever seen before, except maybe for the ones the white-gloved creations of Walt Disney drove in the comic books, but among them he saw an old Volkswagen Beetle, a car that might have been a Chevrolet Corvair, and something he believed was a Model A Ford. There were no tires on any of these eerie hulks. They'd either been stolen or had rotted away to dust long since. And all the glass had been broken, as if the remaining denizens of this city abhorred anything which might show them their own reflections, even accidentally. Beneath and between the abandoned cars, the gutters were filled with drifts of unidentifiable metal junk and bright glints of glass. Trees had been planted at intervals along the sidewalks in some long-gone happier time, but they were now so emphatically dead that they looked like stark metal sculptures against the cloudy sky. Some of the warehouses had either been bombed or had collapsed on their own, and beyond the jumbled heaps of bricks, which was all that remained of them, Jake could see the river and the rusty, sagging underpinnings of the Send Bridge. That smell of wet decay, a smell that seemed almost a snarl in the nose, was stronger than ever. The street headed due east, diverging from the path of the beam, and Jake could see it became more and more choked with rubble and rickrack as it went. 6 or 7 blocks down, it appeared to be entirely plugged, but it was in this direction that Gasher pulled him. At first he kept up, but Gasher was setting a fearsome pace. Jake began to pant and fell a step behind. Gasher almost jerked him off his feet as he dragged Jake toward the barriers of junk and concrete and rusty steel beams which lay ahead. The plug, which looked like a deliberate construction to Jake, lay between 2 broad buildings with dusty marble facades. In front of the one on the left was a statue Jake recognized at once. It was the woman called Blind Justice, and that almost surely made the building she guarded a courthouse. But he only had a moment to look. Gasher was dragging him relentlessly toward the barricade, and he wasn't slowing down. "He'll kill us if he tries to take us through there," Jake thought. But Gasher, who ran like the wind, in spite of the disease which advertised itself on his face, simply buried his fingers deeper in Jake's upper arm and swept him along. And now Jake saw a narrow alley in the not-quite-haphazard pile of concrete, splintered furniture, rusted plumbing fixtures, and chunks of trucks and automobiles. He suddenly understood. This maze would hold Roland up for hours, but it was Gasher's backyard, and he knew exactly where he was going. The small, dark opening to the alley was on the left side of the tottery pile of junk. As they reached it, Gasher tossed the green object back over his shoulder.
"Better duck, dearie,"
he cried, and voiced a series of shrill, hysterical giggles. A moment later, a huge, crumping explosion shook the street. One of the bubble-shaped cars jumped 20 feet into the air and then came down on its roof. A hail of bricks whistled over Jake's head, and something thumped him hard on the left shoulder blade. He stumbled and would have fallen if Gasher hadn't yanked him upright and pulled him into the narrow opening in the rubble. Once they were in the passageway which lay beyond, gloomy shadows reached out eagerly and enfolded them. When they were gone, a small furry shape crept out from behind a concrete boulder. It was Oi. He stood at the mouth of the passage for a moment, neck stretched forward, eyes gleaming. Then he followed after, nose low to the ground and sniffing carefully.